now our feature presentation.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Washington. Protests over racial justice and police violence have rocked America for weeks now. And there's been a lot of people, mostly white people, looking for ways to educate themselves on race. Many are turning to books and film for help, which might be why 2011's The Help has become the most watched movie on Netflix. The 1960s drama about black domestic workers in the South has millions of fans. But a lot of people, mostly black people, say if you want to learn about systemic racism, The Help is not very helpful. Why is that? And what films should you turn to in this moment? Here to add some movie recommendations to your list is Brooke Obie, award-winning film critic and author of the novel Cradled Embers. Welcome, Brooke.
Thank you so much for having me.
Biandria July is a freelance film critic and audio producer. Her work has appeared in The New York Times, The Hollywood Reporter, Time, and others. Biandria, welcome back to 1A.
Thanks so much for having me, Sasha.
And John Horn is the host of KPCC's The Frame and longtime vice president of the 1A Movie Club. John, good to have you here again.
Happy to be with you.
Now, John, let's talk about The Help. For those who haven't seen it, just give us a brief rundown of what The Help is about.
Oh, my goodness. it is about, it's like,
oh my goodness, he says,
fraught with peril here. I guess I can't say, oh, Lordy. I guess we would say it is about a young woman played by Emma Stone who decides to write a newspaper column, and then that segues into, you know, interviews with maids about their lives, working for white families. There's some romance, there's a lot of really awkward conversations about race and about how The Help is taken advantage of. There you have it. I mean,
this is one heck of a plot summary, by the way. Thank you so much.
It is a look at people who are maids, African-American maids in the South, kind of post or during Jim Crow. The more I say, the worse it's going to sound, but that's probably fair.
Gotcha. Now, we always start the movie club by going around the horn and getting people's starred rating of the movie. So, Biandria, how many stars out of 5 are you giving The Help?
I'm giving it a 2 because the cast is stellar.
Yes. Viola Davis, Emma Stone.
Octavia won her Oscar for
Octavia
this.
Octavia with
but
her
even
Oscar
Jessica
win.
Chastain and a bunch of other. Leslie Jordan is in it, I discovered when I watched it again last night. The pandemic queen of Instagram, so.
Right. Brooke, how about you? How many stars are you giving The Help?
I feel safe to give it a 1 because Viola Davis came out in 2018 saying that she regretted the movie. So even though she is a fantastic actress in everything that she does, I think the harm that it does outweighs her fantastic performance. And even she would agree with that, I think, by saying that she regrets being in it.
Okay, so a 2, a 1. How about you, John? What are you rating The Help?
I'll go 2 just because even though it is so painful to watch, I think it was made with good intentions, but the fact that people enjoy it doesn't excuse it. A lot of people like to eat Hot Pockets. That doesn't mean it's good for you.
Okay. Biandria, you heard John just say it was painful to watch. Sum it up for us. Why is The Help not a great resource right now when it comes to understanding race in America? Because we've got some deep issues that are coming bubbling up to the surface right now. Why is this not the film?
Yeah, I think what's mainly offensive about it is it's sort of a warped, sentimental view of what life in the South was like. There's just so many bumps that indicate that a white person wrote it, or rather a non-black person wrote it. For example, one of the maids steals a ring and then goes to pawn it to pay her son's college tuition. And before that, she asked them for a loan, her boss, and her boss is notorious. She's like the lead racist woman in the movie, played by Bryce Dallas Howard. And, that just struck me as so false. Like, yeah. A, that she would ask her boss for a loan. B, that she had just started working for them because Octavia's character had been fired from that home. and that she would go pawn it in the town where she lives, where she knows everyone knows each other. I mean, the whole thing was just like, this is a complete fantasy. So there's just, it's just not realistic, and it tries to make itself seem like it's about this journalist crusading to be a white ally, but really she's making it all about herself, and I don't know if she's humanizing the maids in the process.
And you mentioned Bryce Dallas Howard. She's also come out recently, I believe on her Instagram, to basically tell you not to watch this film that she was in herself. You mentioned Viola's regret in playing that role. And there's also a lawsuit from Aibileen Cooper. She's a Black maid who says that her life story was stolen from Catherine Stockett, the white author who actually wrote the book version of The Help. Now, Brooke, the white film director, Tate Taylor, turned The Help novel into a film. Is there a fundamental issue with a white director creating a film about racism?
I think that there's not a fundamental issue with a white director making a film about racism. I think the issue is that white directors often, when they talk about racism in their films, want to make or pretend as if they're talking about Black people and centering Black people, but they never are. There's always a white savior. It's always from a white lens. So if they actually wanted to make a film about racism that was actually centered on white people, then it would actually deal with white people dealing with their own racism and dealing with racism in their community and dealing with how they're going to fix racism. Because I do think that is, you know, that anti-racist work is white people's work to do. So it would be great to actually have a white filmmaker actually focus on that. And they just prefer to create stories like The Help, like Green Book, like so many other white savior narratives that center white people in Black people's stories instead of doing that really hard work.
We are talking with film critics Brooke Obie and Beyondria July. Also with us is John Horn from KPCC, host of The Frame. Brooke, The Help is far from the only movie with a white savior narrative. The Green Book, that just won Best Picture 2 years ago. Why are these stories so popular?
The stories are popular because they are comforting, because they set racism in a time that is past and far gone. And they also allow for white people to feel redeemed, to feel like racism is solved, to feel like they are okay for not being anti-racist. And it's very comforting to have a white person come in and save the day and save the world, as is often the narrative in these kinds of stories. And so I think that's why they're very popular, because they make people feel good. And racism doesn't feel good. And it definitely doesn't feel good as a Black person in the present day to be experiencing racism on a daily basis and these really insidious ways in the workplace, in healthcare. We're seeing it with the impact of the coronavirus on the Black and brown communities. You know, racism is very, very present today. And so to continue to have these stories that paint it as if it's a past issue makes it very, very difficult for us to actually progress forward and for our country to live up to these ideals that it claims that it has.
Beyondria, here's an email from Norman in Ohio. He says, I understand the white savior complaint, and as a white man, I see the issues with us telling their stories. But as a gay man of a certain age, I also understand very, very well the importance of straight allies in the fight for gay rights. I know for a fact that we would not have made the strides we have made, including yesterday's landmark LGBTQ protections handed down from the Supreme Court, without them. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brooke spoke to it just now beautifully, is that it's not that white people shouldn't make stories or ally with Black people. It's that they should do it with a certain degree of humility, understanding that there are going to be blind spots that they have, and they do it in collaboration with the Black people at the center of their story, assuming that's what the premise of the movie is. It's not an either-or thing, but I think that in Hollywood, sometimes convenience wins overall, and people are hesitant to reach out because they don't want the real feedback. you know, this, it's like if they had shown the screenplay for The Help to anyone who wasn't invested in the movie, you know, they could have gotten this feedback and done a rewrite before this all came out. But there wasn't that interest, right?
Yeah.
You know, so
Yeah, we'll talk more. Lots to say here. You know, The Help is trending on Netflix. That's the reason we're having this conversation. We'll talk about how much of this is Netflix's fault, or is it? In a moment, we'll also get our film critics to tell us what we should be watching on our screens to learn more about what's happening around the U.S. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor LegalZoom. We're all faced with new challenges these days. If you need legal help for yours, count on LegalZoom. Have questions about setting up a will or a living trust? Do you want to start a business as a DBA or LLC? LegalZoom can help. You can start online, and their network of attorneys can provide advice when you need it. And since LegalZoom isn't a law firm, you don't have to leave your home, and you won't get charged by the hour. Visit LegalZoom.com today for more information.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Hey, y'all. I'm Sam Sanders, host of It's Been a Minute. There is a lot going on in the world. So on my show, my guest and I make sense of the news and culture through conversation. It feels like we're living in three movies at once.
That's a good way to put it.
It feels like a Mike Judge movie. It feels like a Spike Lee movie. And it feels like a Michael Bay movie. Like
Every Tuesday and Friday, listen and subscribe now to It's Been a Minute from NPR.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about movies that tackle racism in America, some that succeed and others that don't. We asked our listeners for some of their suggestions. Here's what you left in our inbox.
Hey, my name is Maria Emilia Borja, calling from Wilmington, North Carolina. I am calling to suggest we should all be watching Wilmington on Fire. It's a documentary about the 1898 massacre of a thriving Black community here.
Two films that I took away from a Black cinema class that affected me deeply. One was Daughters of the Dust, which is more about the narrative, the rhythmic and sensory experience than the classic Western narrative, and opens up a door to generational trauma. And the second is The Watermelon Woman, which is an insight into the Black lesbian experience that I think is often overlooked.
I'd like to recommend American Violet. It was not a movie many people had seen. It came out in 2008, and it deals with a woman who went through the criminal justice system and was encouraged to take a plea bargain. I find that it centers the story of Black characters and really stands in contrast to The Help.
Thanks to Maria in Wilmington, Olivia from Tampa, and Jack from Indiana for leaving your recommendations. Now, John, Netflix did try to respond to the backlash from The Help by adding a Black Lives Matter category, which features films like Spike Lee's Malcolm X, also Ava DuVernay's documentary 13th. Tell us how much of The Help trending was Netflix's fault, and how much of it is just the people that are clicking play?
I don't know how much of it we can attribute to Netflix. And I think a parallel story might be how popular Contagion was at the beginning of the pandemic.
Right.
That people are looking for stories that they think are going to offer some sort of insight. The difference between Contagion and The Help is Contagion is rooted in the real world. I mean, one of the problems that I just want to add to The Help is the real world doesn't seem to exist. Somebody comes in and said, oh, something bad has happened to Medgar Evers, and then that's it. But when you're talking about what an aggregator like Netflix can do, listen, the people who are choosing movies to watch ultimately are going to choose what they're going to watch. And certainly you're going to get recommendations that might not be proper or might actually be wrong. But the fact that there's so much there to check out and that so much of it is good, listen, the fact that Netflix is promoting certain kind of movies, I think, is really important. We can maybe talk about John Ridley's crusade to get HBO to take down Gone with the Wind. I think the best idea is to make everything available and to make sure that movies like The Help are subject to criticism like they're getting now. And this is one thing I just want to add to this conversation. I went on Rotten Tomatoes last night to look at what the top critics said about The Help. There are 50 critics. I could find two that were Black, Roxane Gay and Wesley Morris. Every wow. other critic was white. Mm. So when you start talking about a movie like The Help and people start checking Rotten Tomatoes scores, it's really important who's writing about the movie, not just who made it, but who's reviewing it. You have a very narrow view of criticism for a movie like that, and including all movies. And I think that really shapes how people go on Netflix based on Rotten Tomatoes scores or things like that. you got to look at who's saying this is a good movie before you start thinking about whether or not you should check it out.
Yeah, the overall whiteness of the entire ecosystem at Hollywood is sounds like that's the major issue here. So the people behind the scenes, the directors, the writers, even the critics. I want to bring in some listener voices here. First, an email from Carol Santos. She says, I do not interpret The Help as a white savior story at all. During the time period it's set in, there was no route for black people to tell their stories. So, of course, a change would have to come from the controlling system. I see these women as the strongest characters in the movie. They enabled white viewers to see themselves and perhaps the issue in a new light. Now, one of our listeners actually used film as a way to cool tensions where he worked.
Hi, this is Eric from Minneapolis. I have a work situation where racial tensions surfaced, bubbled up, searching for a way for my staff to come together. And I found a movie called The Hate You Give. And we've all decided to sit down and watch it together. Some chose to watch individually, but it's been a healing moment for all of us.
How can films be a tool for education when done right, John?
I mean, Hate U Give is a really good example. And I think it's like kids who are not in class at college, they're doing kind of satellite online learning. The best education that people have in a classroom is the conversations they're having with each other. The best conversations you can have in that workplace are how people are reacting to a movie like The Hate U Give, which is based on the novel by Angie Thomas. I think conversation is the most important thing. I remember watching The Watchmen, and I had heard about the Tulsa riots, but I wasn't really sure about what had happened. And I don't know if you know how this adaptation came to be, but it really starts with the Tulsa race riot of 1921. And I was watching with my family, and we started having these conversations like, I remember that, but what happened? We opened books, we started reading about it, and now, of course, it's become kind of a big deal in terms of what the president might do in Oklahoma. So those are the things that I think are really important. Like when you watch something, how do you talk about it and how do you educate yourself? The other thing I would recommend that guy watch is O.J. Made in America, Ezra Edelman series about O.J. Simpson. One of the best documentaries I think about sports and race that I've seen in a very long time. But those are the things to do. Sit down with people, watch something that challenges you, get educated, and then argue about it.
Yeah. Now, Dan emails us. He says, I think The Help is a great place for well-meaning but ignorant white people to start their education. Think of it as the early reader on racism in America. There are a lot of white adults in this country who are in the third grade or even kindergarten when it comes to the story of black people in America. That's an interesting point there. Many listeners also brought up the documentary 13th.
Hi, this is Mariko from Ann Arbor, Michigan. I'm calling to talk about 13th. The documentary I recently watched on Netflix. A prompt popped up suggesting movies or documentaries I could watch that help educate about the African-American history in the United States, and I found this one incredibly educational.
Now, before we get to more recommendations, Brooke, interesting that this movie was pushed by Netflix, actually. 13th is one of your recommendations, so tell us why this film right now.
Absolutely. So, you know, I would disagree with the commenter who said that The Help is a good starter point. I think the good starter point is 13th, because what it does is put our current historical climate into the context of slavery and everything about this country and this moment that we're in right now, how it stems from slavery. It does such a great job breaking down the Constitution, the law, the 13th Amendment that has allowed for the loophole of slavery to continue by another name through mass incarceration. And it shows the legislative efforts that have been made to harm black people and to harm minority communities in this country. And so I think that Ava DuVernay has done such a fantastic job in laying out the case for why we are in the moment that we are in right now, because we have not healed and we have not learned from the mistakes of the past. And that, I think, is the greatest way for people who are looking for an intro to get this, you know, less than 2 hour history of America and then start to move forward from there.
Sarah emailed us, Beyondria. She says, as a young white person, I was very moved by the television drama Roots. And Stephen recommends Netflix's series, Dear White People. Is TV doing any better than films right now in Hollywood?
I think in terms of the range of stories being told, definitely episodic is winning out over features. But I think Dear White People, the series, is a great example of that. It's not trying to explain itself to other people. It's just assuming that you're going to come along for the ride, whether you understand or not. I think, speaking of Ava DuVernay, I think Queen Sugar is great. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, we all loved Atlanta. You know, so there's... And Insecure just wrapped up its last season.
Yes.
Those are comedies. And I noticed in the list that I put together of films for people to watch, I noticed there were very few comedies. And I thought, well, yeah, most of the comedies are more on the episodic side.
Yeah, for sure. We're going to get into a lot more recommendations when we return after a quick pause. We are looking at race in America through films and Hollywood's missteps along the way. I am speaking to film critic Brooke Obie, film critic Beyondria July, and John Horner is with us. He's the host of KPCC's The Frame. Stay with us. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. More from our guests and from you in just a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Facebook. In response to COVID-19, people around the world are coming together to help one another. Facebook's community help feature is making that easier. From delivering groceries to neighbors to donating to a local fundraiser or food pantry, Community Help provides a place where people can offer or request support in their area. Learn more at facebook.com/COVID support.
Throughout America's history, small choices have compounded into big inequalities. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. How Injustice Gets Ingrained. That's on the TED Radio Hour from NPR. Subscribe or listen now.
Now, we're talking about films that educate and inspire as America reckons with its own racism. To give us suggestions of what should be playing on our screens, we have Brooke Obie, award-winning film critic and author, Beyondria July, freelance film critic, and John Horn, host of KPCC's The Frame. Now, John, let's turn to one of your top films for this moment. You wanted to highlight the James Baldwin documentary, I Am Not Your Negro. Here's a clip from the 2016 documentary. It actually starts with sound from the 1958 film, The Defiant Ones. Baldwin is then heard talking about its plot.
Look, man, don't give me that look. You should have got what was coming to you after spitting in that guy's face. Why, you...
It is impossible to accept the premise of the story. A premise based on the profound American misunderstanding of the nature of the hatred between black and white.
And that time is now.
The root of the black man's hatred is rage. And he does not so much hate white men as simply wants them out of his way. And more than that, out of his children's way. The root of the white man's hatred is terror. A bottomless and nameless terror. Which focuses on this dread figure, an entity which lives only in his mind.
John, tell us more about this film and why it made your list.
I mean, it sounds like James Baldwin is talking about Tucker Carlson, doesn't it? I mean, and the movie is composed of scenes like that and Baldwin's own words as read by Samuel L. Jackson and Baldwin himself. Baldwin was a novelist, playwright, essayist, activist. His short story was turned into If Beale Street Could Talk by Barry Jenkins a couple years ago. This is a movie about Baldwin's own words, and it's heartbreaking because what he is saying then is even more true today. And it's also about the way that we receive culture and how images from Hollywood shaped the way we see the world. When the movie came out, I talked with the director of the documentary, Raoul Peck, and I just have to share something he said to me.
Sure.
He said, I was born in Haiti. When I left Haiti, I was 8. I went to the Congo where my father was working. The only images that I had were the images of Tarzan. That's what I thought Africa was. Of course, the first day I arrived there, I thought I would see a lot of savages dancing on the tarmac. That's the strength of the Hollywood image and why we call it the Dream Factory. I grew up learning how to deconstruct that machine. And that's what Baldwin taught him. That's what Baldwin could teach other people. And Baldwin's words, they're poetic, they're painful, and they're 100% true. Top recommendation is to watch this documentary. I Am Not Your Negro.
Biandria, you wanted to highlight the 2016 movie Moonlight, directed by Barry Jenkins, but not necessarily as a way to educate white audiences. Tell us more about that.
Right. Yeah. I think Moonlight is a great movie for a number of reasons. First of all, it's just beautifully made. But it's another movie I would say that's, you know, black people just being, you know, in a different movie. That movie takes place in Miami in Liberty City, which is like a working class struggling neighborhood. And in another movie, you know, it would have been about, you know, drugs and drug dealers and crime and violence. And Moonlight is actually about those things, but it's told in such a way that it's from the perspective of the relationships, you know, a mother, the price of addiction on a son's life, and, you know, that they're struggling not just with race, but with sexuality, with, you know, issues of abandonment, and that not all drug dealers are completely evil. And, you know, that he finds a father figure in Juan. And I think that I don't really know. I still am kind of not sure why Moonlight broke through to white people. I still don't really understand
yeah,
that.
I'm not
but
sure
I'm,
either.
I'm glad that it happened.
Yeah.
but I just remember being in the theater. I saw Moonlight in the theater four times when I was living in Washington, D.C. And the first time I was there, it was primarily a black audience. And noticeably, there were a lot of black gay men there. Mm-hmm. I remember because we circled up and talked afterwards. And then the other three times, it was definitely mostly white people. And I would make a point of listening to people's conversations as they walked out of the theater. And they talked, a lot of them talked about it in an almost anthropological way. Mm. You know, when Daughters of the Dust came out, Julie Dash talked about how it was so hard to get it released in America because they really saw it as a foreign film, even though it takes place in Georgia. So I think Moonlight is a great place to start. There's plenty others, too. Yeah. Actually, on the list that I put out on The Hollywood Reporter, Medicine for Melancholy is the Barry Jenkins film that I chose. So I recommend people seek that out as well.
Medicine for Melancholy, you said, correct?
Yeah, it takes place in San Francisco, and it's about a couple sort of traversing through the city. And it talks about gentrification without really ever talking about gentrification, which I think is, you know, it shows a lot more than it tells, which I think is great storytelling.
Interesting. Brooke, let's turn back to you. Another film that you brought up is When They See Us, which we also heard from many listeners as well. I recommend that, too. It's a great, great series on Netflix. Why did it make your list?
Well, I mean, for one, I'm just such a huge fan of Ava. I know if she's making it, I can probably
trust
incredible. This is going to be,
yeah.
This is going to be, you know, it's going to be told with compassion from the perspective of Black people. And it's going to be humanizing and it's going to be educational. And so what When They See Us does as a limited series on Netflix, like basically a 4-hour movie, what it does is it shows the story of the Exonerated Five, once labeled the Central Park Five, these young Black boys in New York who were falsely accused of raping a white woman in Central Park, and literally took 30 years for their name to be restored and for their reputations to be restored and for them to get some sort of healing. Like, it just happened last year after this 1989 case. Shows the harm of policing. It shows why people say we need to defund the police and abolish the police. It shows how the media is complicit in telling these stories. And hopefully what it does is move people to actually act. I think this was the first series, as someone who has a law degree, who is very familiar with the legal system and the injustices there, it really took this series for me to actually start to act. I joined a local organization in Los Angeles, Critical Resistance, and started learning more about how we can fix our society and fix the problems with policing and the prison industrial complex. And I think that is what is so powerful. Just like The Birth of a Nation was used to single-handedly revitalize the Ku Klux Klan, art can be be powerful in changing people's minds for the better and get them to act in the best interests of themselves mm-hmm. and for the rest of society.
Now, here's one of our listeners who called in with her suggestion.
Hey, this is Julie Crow. I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. I couldn't resist responding to the request for movie suggestions. I mean, you got to go to Spike Lee. Everybody should watch Do the Right Thing. That's amazing that that story of what happened and how Radio Raheem was killed by the police is being reenacted on a regular basis still 30-some years later.
Another listener tweeted to us, the movies that enlightened me as a kid and continue to do so are all Spike Lee's. Also, American History X helped me to understand that anyone has the ability to change and become actively anti-racist. John, going back to Julie's message, what is it about Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing? You think it still resonates with people today?
Definitely. My wife and my younger son watched it the other night. We're in the middle of watching Defy Bloods, his newest movie. Listen, Spike can be a little didactic, a little on the nose, but I think he's not only representing a point of view, but he's a really interesting visual storyteller. The way he works with actors, the way he incorporates music, his movies are really well made, and they're about things that are important. And it's also important, I think, and this is, I think, the bigger question about movies and art. As a white moviegoer, the most important thing that I think white moviegoers can do is when they enter the theater or sit in front of their Netflix screen, check their privilege and be empathetic. Understand what other people's experiences might be like. I'm never going to understand what it means to be driving while black, but I can watch When They See Us. Black audiences might say, yeah, that's how it goes. And I can say, what? That's how it goes? We both come out of it angry. We both come out of it motivated to try to bring about change. And I think Spike is really good about that.
Yeah.
I think there's problems with Black Klansmen because I think it's really kind of glorifies police. And I think that's a tricky movie right now. But yeah. I think, you know.
Do the Right Thing. Is
mostly, mostly Do the Right Thing. Fascinating movie and really couldn't be more timely right now.
And The Five Bloods, which is now streaming on Netflix. Brooke, let's just get into a very quick mention here of Just Mercy. It's another one you wanted to talk about. It tells the true story of a wrongly convicted man played by Jamie Foxx and his civil rights attorney played by Michael B. Jordan.
It's easy to see this case as one man trying to prove his innocence. But when you take a black man and you put him on death row a year before his trial, and exclude black people from serving on his jury, when you base your conviction on the coerced testimony of a white felon and ignore the testimony of two dozen law-abiding black witnesses, when any evidence proving his innocence is suppressed and anyone who tries to tell the truth is threatened, this case becomes more than the trial of just a single defendant. It becomes a test of whether we're going to be governed by fear and by anger by the rule of law.
30 seconds, Brooke. Tell us why Just Mercy.
Why Just Mercy? Bryan Stevenson, for one, is just a phenomenal person who has shown for all of us that we can actually be involved and have a role to play in actually making change in this country. What he has done with Just Mercy is to lay out the case for abolishing the death penalty, showing how wrong the system is, how yeah. inherently racist the system is, and how dangerous it is to rely on the system to enact justice mm-hmm. when so many of the people who are being killed by the state are black and brown and poor and unable to provide proper defense for themselves and are being falsely accused in many cases as well.
Final word for you, Biandria. Do you think this moment will change anything for Hollywood? 30 seconds.
I'm hopeful. I think that what will change is if audiences change their behavior, as Brooke has been saying. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Kamau Bell has this concept of black people homework, which is basically every black movie that comes out, black people have to take upon their shoulders and go see whether they want to or not. And I think that needs to shift. I think white people need to see black people homework as their homework. And don't go talk to your black friends about your thoughts about the movie, but go see the movie and pay for it.
Biandria July is a freelance film critic and audio producer. Brooke Obi, award-winning film critic and author of the novel Cradled Embers, and also John Horn, host of KPCC's The Frame and longtime vice president of the 1A Movie Club. Thank you all. This conversation was produced by Michelle Harvin and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Stay safe, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.